Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining us for this Wednesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99, and you can check out everything over at Ethos Fantasy BB for all of our baseball updates, draft guide, podcasts, articles, anything that we post on the baseball side gets shared out through there. And make sure you guys are checking out our draft guide. It's linked in the description of the episode. We are putting in stuff pretty much every single day. My rankings just got an update today that you guys can check out. I think that we're at 25 or 26 articles, and we also have our draft tracker, which uses Ariel Cohen's ATC projection. So make sure you are checking everything out over there. Again, just check out the link right in the description of the episode. I am joined today by a member of Sports Ethos, one of the newer members, Mr. Ben Tidd, to be talking about shortstops. We are going to be previewing the position today in depth for you guys. We're going to be talking about it for the next hour or so, just going through each tier, talking about some guys we like, some guys we are not so big on this year. Make sure you guys are following Ben over on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. Ben, thanks for joining me today, man. It's great to talk with you.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me on. I think this is my first official time on the pod. I was on for the Bubba and the Bloom live stream you did a couple of weeks ago, and that was fun to hop in for a little bit with, I think Curlin was on, or no, it was Bubba, you and Ryan. So yeah. That was fun, but yeah, it's great to be on finally. Like you mentioned, it's been fun joining Sports Ethos so far. I've helped write two articles and, well, I don't know if we'll talk about it now, but I have a third one coming out soon. And then, season starts. So it's, things are going to ramp up pretty soon. I think, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to be one of the guys looking at pitchers for us this year, writing some pitching articles in season, probably doing some other stuff as much as I can get out of you. And we're also going to be getting a main event draft review from you. That's that's the 20th, right? March 20th, that main event?
Yeah, correct. 1 week from today, we're recording on the 13th. So next Wednesday is my first main event.
Okay. Are you doing that on stream or is that one?
No, I'm not crazy enough to do that. I'm gonna be sitting tight in my little shell.
That makes sense. You're not crazy like I am, live streaming every single draft I do. It definitely puts you back a little bit when you got to be streaming, especially for an auction. But it is great to have you on here, of course. About that main event, is there anybody fun that we know? I know that everybody's kind of jumping around in and out of leagues, but right now, do you know anybody who else you're going to be competing against in that league, or is it just kind of up in the air still?
Yeah, well, why bring it up? So it actually, we had a false alarm the other day, and the league was finalized by mistake. And it was kind of, I was surprised when it happened, because usually it's more like closer to the KDS runtime, which is 5 days out. So that's supposed to be Friday. But then we got an email shortly after saying, oh, it kind of jumped the gun, and they had to open it back up. But I know that where am I? Here I am. So Dom Morello, the bullpen guru, he's in it. I've been talking to him a lot about it. The War Dog, Daniel De Silva's in it. Ray Murphy from Baseball HQ's in it. Sammy Reed's in it. And the other name that I'm familiar with is Bob Katsarumpus. He's I feel like he's been in the main with me the last couple of years, but he's very good as well. So there's six names right off the bat. I'm sure other people in the league are pretty good too. So it's always tough with the main event. You're always going to have good players with you. It's you try to avoid the big names, but you can't avoid everybody.
Yeah, I've just seen so much chatter. I don't play in the main event. I probably will in a couple of years once I'm more familiar with the NFBC, but I just see all this talk about people hopping in and out of leagues and just checking out and see who joins. And then, you know, Phil Dussault will join the league and then everybody hops out of the league or whatever it is that's going on, that kind of thing. But it is great to have you. We are going to be talking about shortstops today. What's your kind of overall philosophy on the position? Do you go into his drafts in general saying, I'm going to get an early guy, I'm going to wait? What are your thoughts on the position as a whole, Ben?
I kind of do that, not for shortstop so much, though, but after doing a few DCs and an auction so far, I've noticed where the drops go off in the talent. And I forget if one of my draft champions was if I was starting Trevor Story at shortstop, which isn't really ideal because I wasn't that big on him coming into the season just because of the average and the strikeout issues. But shortstop, so I would like to get a shortstop earlier if rather than later if I can, but I'm not going to force it. I think other positions are a little more important to plan your drafts around, like catcher and relief pitcher, I think, are two of the biggest ones. But when it comes to shortstop, I mean, I have some guys late that I would be okay with if I had to, but I would rather get someone earlier than not.
Yeah. Generally, for me, the last few years, I've thought to myself, shortstop is really deep. I can wait until the 14th or 15th guy and be happy. I don't think it's as deep this year as it has been in years past. So if I'm, you know, leaving round 10 or so without my starting shortstop, I'm not too happy. I do want to kind of lock it down earlier rather than later. We're going to be breaking it down by tiers, and the first tier here by ADP. And I'm kind of using just the first couple of rounds. You could tier it a few different ways, but I'm going with, to start off, the guys that are going in the first three or four rounds, the early rounders: Bobby Witt Jr., Trey Turner, Ellie De La Cruz, Francisco Lindor, Gunnar Henderson, CJ Abrams, Corey Seager, Bo Bichette, and O'Neill Cruz has now jumped into that group. I know it is kind of a big tier. It is nine names, and we'll talk about the guys kind of individually as we go along. But early round shortstops, round one, Bobby Witt, round one, Trey Turner, round two guys. Is that something that you've found yourself doing so far in drafts this year?
The only one I've drafted so far in a snake draft is Gunnar Henderson. And you could put him at third base if you wanted to, but it's more just of where I've drafted. I haven't had the second pick yet to get Bobby Witt. I think I passed on Trey Turner the one time I was drafting late, and or maybe he went before I was able to take him. So it's just more of where I've been drafting. But I did grab Lindor in my auction I did last week, actually a few days ago, last weekend. He's someone I like. And yeah, so the great thing about the shortstops is they provide you speed. And now that with the rule changes, you need more speed. So I think it's good to get some help early on. And all these shortstops to some degree help you out. And so except for Seager, and he's dropped because of the injury. And I was willing to take him kind of at the end of the first round in a 15, so middle of the second round in a 12-teamer. But he's kind of out of the pit. He's a tough one to talk about because I don't really know when he's going to be healthy. But all the guys at the top, I except for Ellie, I'm pretty fine with.
I don't know if I've seen a really recent update on Seager. I'm just going to scan and see if there's been anything in the last couple of days. He took some light swings on Monday. That was the last thing that I'm seeing here in terms of recent news on him. But yeah, I have a couple of drafts early in the season where I took Seager around 18th, 19th overall, and I was pretty happy with it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com. TRUGREEN.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now, I don't really mind it so much as he kind of just a full of, like, if you're able to get him in the middle of round three, late round, like, where's your point for him where you do want to take Corey Seager, where you would end up taking him, you think?
So I actually just moved him down a little bit in my overall rankings. Well, actually, I dropped him a lot. So I put him down at 45 just because this is more of me being in trying to avoid injuries. It's something I've tried to make a point of this year because I made a couple of mistakes last year taking guys with uncertain outlooks, and I feel like it hurt me a little bit just because of the opportunity cost that you get out of taking them. And with Seager too, like, he has a poor health history to begin with, doesn't provide speed at the shortstop position, which you typically want if you're, especially like in a deeper league or even more so in a shallow league. If you have smaller rosters, you need more speed from every position, and he kind of throws off your roster build if you take him. And I mean, like, hitting wise, he's great. And like in a points league, it's a completely different story. He's a lot more valuable, I think. But just the unknown with the injury is why I moved him down so much. It's not really so much him. Like I said, I had him ranked in the top 20 before he got hurt, but I probably shouldn't, because of course he's hurt again. It kind of always happens with him.
Yeah. He was so valuable last season, even with missing time, even with the lack of stolen bases. I think that's why people are still taking him where they are. But it is tricky. Like, I've talked about this all off season, that you're going to rack up so many injuries throughout the course of the season as it is. Do you really want to start adding on to them before the year starts? We don't really know what we're talking about in terms of injuries at the same time. Like, if you told me a couple weeks ago that Gerrit Cole was going to be not, and I know you're a Yankee fan, so I'm sorry to bring this up, but it is kind of today's news. But if you told me that Gerrit Cole was not going to be healthy to start the year and Tyler Glass now was, like, that's not something that you would have even believed, because Cole has been perceived to be safe and Glass now is not safe. So it's such a tricky thing to kind of wrap our heads around these guys that we perceive as safe and not safe. But at the same time, I think taking a guy who is going to be potentially not ready for the season, I don't think Corey Seager is going to be starting on opening day. I don't know that there's been an official announcement about that. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but it's pretty damn concerning for sure. Not to mention the lack of speed, that, you know, a lot of other things that go into it as well.
It's all right. Yeah, it's tough. Like, also too, most of my leagues now are NFBC, and I don't have an IL in NFBC, so that plays a lot into my thinking. But if you're on Yahoo or somewhere else where there's an IL, it's a different story. I mean, and if you haven't drafted yet, anyone listening, and we get an update that he's going to miss like the first week, cause I think he's like ramping up now. It's just that he's delayed. Yeah. Then if there's any discount, I would take him probably and just put him on the IL and add someone from the waiver wire for a week. I think that's fine if you want to do that. But I feel like we don't, like you said, I don't think we know enough right now for me to be comfortable drafting him yet.
Yeah. And even if he does come back, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's just back. This is Corey Seager. We're talking about a long history of injuries now. Right. Somebody in this group that, you know, I've been generally interested in kind of all of them. Ellie De La Cruz, I talked about a lot yesterday with DVR on the third base show. We're, I think, generally most of the people in the community that I talk to are kind of fading him. I'm really not sure who keeps taking him in the second round. But the guys, the specific guy that I haven't had any interest in really, and I've talked about a lot, is CJ Abrams. I just find him to be so risky. considering that most of his production is just that one category. He's a fancy Esteri Ruiz, and that might be insulting a little bit, but is there a huge difference? Is there a massive difference between what we're going to get out of them?
I think Abrams has more power than Ruiz. I believe he had 18 homers, Abrams did last year, and he's also hitting in a higher lineup position. So I get the comp in terms of what you're going to get from him stats wise. But I mean, when it comes to Abrams, I think he's somewhat, he's not a rabbit, but if he gets hurt, then your production is probably going to be pretty lopsided from how you've drafted. So if you want to go hitter heavy early, take someone like Yordan and another hitter who has pretty decent small base production, then you go to take Abrams to get back into like catch back up. That's fine. He's got to make sure it's just a little more risky because you're banking on all that production from the one category from him. And also too, so he was someone, so I wrote about Lane Thomas in one of the articles we put out earlier in the off season. And it seems like, so Lane Thomas had this spike in production in the, like for 2 months. And when I was looking at Abrams doing my research in the winter, he had the same thing. So everyone remembers when Abrams got moved to the leadoff spot, he got hot and like, he was just stealing bases left and right. And the steals continued through that end of the season. But like his OPS, I think, or his WOBA, it spiked at the same time. And then he kind of went down to how he was hitting in the first 2 or 3 months of the season. So that kind of has me worried that he's caught a hot streak. I mean, he is young, so he could still grow this year. And he's going to hit first or second with Thomas, so with the Nationals. And Abrams will get a lot of plate appearances. And he could hit 20 homers if he plays a full season. So he could go like 20-50 maybe, which is great. But for someone who doesn't strike out a lot, he has a poor XBA and an actual average, so he's definitely tricky. It's really dependent on who I take in the first two rounds, probably, or two or three rounds, depending on what league size you're playing and if I'm going to take him or not.
I think everything you said is totally fair. Where I get the Ruiz thing is not just the speed, but I was listening to the Baseball HQ radio podcast yesterday. Patrick Davitt had Jeff Zimmerman on, and they were talking about how Ruiz could potentially have a little bit more power coming this season. They got into it in depth. You guys should listen to that episode. If Ruiz is able to hit 12 homers, 13 homers, and steal like 60 bags, the counting stats are going to be different and the positions are different. So yeah, it's not a direct comp. I just hate paying for just that one category. For me, it would have to be a situation where I went with Yordan Alvarez and Aaron Judge in rounds 1 and 2 or something like that. And then I really was at a deficit where I needed to be making up for it. And at that point in the draft, everybody drafts differently. I would rather not have many deficits. And I know it's easy to say you don't have any deficits. It's just, I don't want to put myself into a spot, especially in round 3, where I feel like I need to take somebody that I'm not really that interested in just because they excel in that one category. Another thing I'll say about steals, another thing that I talked about on yesterday's show, so apologize for the repetitiveness for those who are listening both times, but stolen bases, you can find them a little bit later on. I feel like if you look at 30 stolen bases from our third round guy versus 30 stolen bases from a 10th round guy, we feel like those 30 stolen bases are more valuable from the early guy, even though, you know, and I'm just talking about the steals, not the whole package. Like, let's just look at Jaren Duran. His 30 steals, I think, or let's call it 35, I don't think people value that as much as potentially 35, 40 that you'd get from a third rounder. Is that just kind of a weird thought? Like, you know what I'm saying?
I do. Yeah. If you're doing an evaluation method, they're literally valued the same, but I think I love Duran. So it's, he's a bad one for you to pick, but like I've drafted Duran 3 times more than I've drafted Abrams so far this year. Yeah. And, I think, well, when you get the steals early, it gives you more flexibility with some picks later on. Like if someone falls that doesn't get a lot of steals, but you think they're a really good player and they could help you in the 4 other categories, then it helps you in that sense. And I get where you're coming from. It's definitely a good thing to think about when you're planning out your drafts. But I think Abrams could steal 60, so I think that's why he's going here, based on at the rate he was stealing when he got hot. And yeah, I think that's why, but people see the ceiling with Abrams being a little bit higher. And yeah, I've always thought Duran was a value where he was going. And I think his ADP is going to move up as we get closer to the season starting. But yeah, it's definitely a good thing to ponder.
Yeah, I don't find myself reaching for those early steals necessarily this year. I just feel like I can find them as we go on. And we're going to talk about some more of those guys. The last player I think Warren's talking about in this tier right now is O'Neal Cruz. He is maybe the talk of the town on fantasy baseball Twitter right now in terms of the hottest players. Probably there's a few players always in contention for that, but he's hit 5 homers over the last 4 days. I've been getting him in a lot of drafts in the 7th round, the 6th round, the 8th round type of range. I'm currently in a draft where he just went 37th overall, and that is looking like more of the norm. If you look at the graph that they have on NFBC that shows you the pick chart, he is trending very much upward with a minimum pick of 31 in all drafts. Ben, is this justified? Is this something that people should be doing? Should we be pushing O'Neal Cruz up to the 3rd round? I love him, but I don't know if I love him that much.
I think it's a little crazy. So I have him and Ellie De La Cruz kind of ranked similarly in my overall, and it's the comp that everyone loves to make. It's people are gonna say it's like cliche, but it's a legit comp, I think, just because based on the flaws in their games, the upside they both bring, and so it makes sense that one's moving towards the other. I think they're going in the wrong direction though. It was Rob Silver I saw who kind of tweeted about this today or yesterday, and he was saying like nothing's changed with O'Neal. Like he hasn't, like his underlying skills are the same. Like he didn't make an improvement last season. It's just a handful of spring training at bats, which people do like to overreact to one way, positive or negative, which I get. I mean, it's finally kind of real data. I mean, you can argue how reliable it actually is, but they're seeing him produce after missing half or all of last year. And he's never played a full season. He only played like a half season when in 2022, I believe. And then he got hurt early last year. So he's kind of an unknown like Ellie is. And I think the people drafting for O'Neal, it is an OC though. So you can go for a little more upside. Like for me in a 15 teamer, I'd rather wait to maybe be like in the round 5 range probably. So after pick 60. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a good sign that he's healthy. So, because they always had that upside of potentially like 30-30, the average is going to be questionable. And I mean, but besides that, I get the hype. I just don't necessarily agree with it.
I hate that this is what it's become, because I was hoping, and I've done most of my drafts now where I have been able to get him later on, but I love to see, people passing up on O'Neal Cruz all of draft season, and now is when they kind of think, well, maybe he can actually, like, we knew these things about him already. We knew that he could hit the ball 155 miles an hour off the bat and hit it 585 feet. Like, we've known these things already. You get reminded of them, and that's when you think in the 4th round, like, oh, maybe I'll take a chance. But I agree, as much as I love him, and if anybody's seen my rankings, they'll know I ranked him like very aggressively this year, but I don't want to pay that price for him. So I'll take the early shares that I have and kind of probably say that I'm done at that point, as much as I'd like to keep stacking them up for every single team. I just can't do it in the 3rd or the 4th round. As much as I love him, there is still some risk. He's still playing for not a great team. He's not a massive batting average asset. There are still some flaws, as much as I could talk about him all day in a positive light. You can't just look at that. Let's talk about this next tier now. It was going to start with Cruz, but considering his ADP has jumped up so much, we're going to be starting off with Nico Horner, working our way down through Xander Bogaerts. It's kind of a shorter tier here. Horner, Matt McClain, Ha-Sung Kim, and Xander Bogaerts. You could kind of add Anthony Volpe into that mix as well. He's kind of like a fringe guy, but in this group of players, I don't think I've drafted any of them even one time, and it's not so much about them. I actually kind of do like Bogaerts. It's more so just in this range, I'm targeting starting pitchers. I'm getting a couple more outfielders. It's just not a range where I really want second base. A lot of these guys are multi-eligible, so I could understand the interest. But Ben, are you clicking on these guys as you go along through round 5 or so? Horner, McClain, Kim, Bogaerts, Volpe?
No, I haven't drafted anyone from this group either. And so the one I could see myself taking would be McClain, maybe, if he continues to drop. And if I've gotten enough pitching by the time he does drop, I'm looking at the ADP we have here for the OC since March, and his max is 110. So at that point, I could be good with pitching, and I could be looking to take a hitter again. And I think taking him at that price would be good. But other than that, though, I value Kim with some guys we're going to talk about in the next tier. Same with Xander. I think him and Dansby are very similar, and Dansby goes later. Nico is an interesting debate because of the no power, but the good average and speed. And I haven't taken Nico yet. He's kind of in that same range where I like the starters going. And yes, like I agree with what you said about just looking for different things when these guys are going.
Yeah, McLean is the interesting one because early on in draft season, like what's McLean's minimum of all, for all drafts and all of draft season? It's 30. There was times when Matt McLean was going, you know, that's kind of an anomaly a little bit, but not even so much. Early drafts, he was going in the third round pretty consistently, fourth round. And you can understand it based on the talent, and even the projections are really, really nice. 24 and 17, if you just look at the Steamer Razzball projections that they have now on the NFBC. 24 and 17 with a 260 batting average, multi-eligible. Like you said, if he just continues to fall, like the last thing I saw was a report from Roto Baller, and I had it up here, McLean confident in opening day health. So even if that doesn't mean he's there from day one, that means that he's probably going to be there, you know, pretty soon thereafter. And the situation for everybody in Cincinnati is a little more clear than it was a few days ago with the Noelvi Marte incident. I don't think that McLean was somebody who was necessarily going to be at risk of losing any playing time, but now that's kind of just assured that there's not going to be any funny business really going on there. But yeah, this tier, not really that appealing. Although Xander Bogaerts, I haven't clicked on his name. I don't have any problem with it. He's still kind of just one of those boring guys that continues to fall, but is still a good batting average asset, a potential 2020 bat. You know, the lineup isn't great all around, but where he is batting, he's right around Machado and Tatis. Do you have any problem with taking Bogaerts in this range?
No. So like he's definitely, I think, more valuable in a 15 where you need a little more floor. But like I kind of mentioned, I think him and Dansby, and even projections are, have them very similarly projected. I'd rather just take Dansby, I think, a little bit later. I believe Xander had a wrist issue last year where he had to get a cortisone for it or something, and I don't think he ever had surgery, so it's not really fixed. Xander's also been someone who's always outperformed his, at least his XBA. I remember looking at him when I was digging into the positions in the winter, and I wonder if that's ever going to stop. I mean, he's a good line drive hitter, so he probably hits his way at like he just overachieves naturally, and there's guys who do that.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The X stats aren't perfect, but he's in a good lineup position. Like the top four or five in San Diego is solid. And so, I mean, but just because of the, I can get Dansby later. I probably just would wait around and then take him instead of Xander.
Yeah. Let's move on into the next tier because it is, like I said, and you've mentioned this a couple times now, there's a few interesting names here and one that I know we're both pretty interested in. So let's start it off with Mr. Swanson going to Tyro Estrada, Jackson Holliday, Trevor Story, Willy Adames, Ezekiel Tovar, and then Tommy Edman is still kind of kicking around. He started to fall a little bit more recently because it doesn't look like he's going to be ready for opening day. But who do you like in this group? Because I know that there's somebody, Tyro Estrada, that I think we're pretty interested in here. Let's talk about him first. Let's talk about Tyro Estrada, right? I'm not crazy. You're as interested as I am this season.
Yeah. So he was one of my targets in the auction because I hadn't drafted him yet in my four DCs prior to it. I was able to get him finally. So I was happy about that.
I think that there's something to be said about the stolen bases potentially going up with the new manager this year. It was something that was brought up at First Pitch Arizona. I think that there's a chance that he's like a 30 steal guy. Like he could be a 20-30 guy who hits 270. He has multi-eligibility. He's somebody that he might be in all of fantasy baseball this year. He might be my favorite player to draft overall. Am I overhyping Tyro Estrada, or is there enough reason to get excited about him as like potentially a top like 50 fantasy player maybe?
Well, I can tell you listen to Bubba's podcast. No, I'm just kidding.
I do.
I know. You're always in the, I'm messing because everyone knows how much Bubba loves Tyro. But I tweeted this out not that long ago, but I compared Tyro, Kim, I put Edmund in there, and like Geloff and the other second baseman, because Tyro is multi-eligible, like you mentioned. They're all like the same profile. So I think Tyro is just as good as Kim, and you're getting him in OC's 50 picks later. And I mean, you get the extra position with Kim, but and people probably see like the upper 30 steals, and that's why he's going where Kim's going. But Tyro is, if you look at the underlying stats, Tyro is just as good, maybe better in certain stats. They both have poor barrel rates, so it's not like you're getting a big boost with Kim. But you don't expect a high barrel rate from someone like Tyro. You want the speed, and like you were alluding to with the new manager in San Francisco, he could run more. And with Tyro, he was having a breakout year last year until he got hit in the hand. And it was annoying having him on two or three teams last year, and then him coming back and just not being the same player. And you can't really blame him getting hit on the hand and having a broken wrist or whatever he had, a broken hand. That's, it can really affect your swing, not to mention your power. And he doesn't have much power to begin with, but he's going to hit first or second on the Giants. He's going to play every day. He's not one of their platoon guys, which is great. He doesn't walk, which you would say is not good, but if he hits for a good average, it helps because he's getting more at bats. So he's going to be helping your average more by getting actual at bats and not just the walks take away from that average boost that other guys may not provide. And yeah, I love Tyro. Second and short is great. He's going to play all the time. And I think 20-30 is in the cards. That's kind of what you hear thrown out a lot. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about another guy who isn't currently, excuse me, second and short eligible, but who will be pretty soon, at least I hope, Jackson Holliday. Do you think, first off, that he's going to make the opening day roster? Because at this point, I'd be shocked if he doesn't.
Yeah, I've always assumed that he would make it. Okay. I'm just like stunned now that his ADP is this high.
I thought you thought that it would be lower.
Well, when I was I stopped drafting at the end of February, and he wasn't going this early. So I think what's his min? I'm looking at 135. Yeah, I don't think I ever saw him go that early when I was doing DCs. But I guess because people hear now that he's more likely to make the roster. That's probably why he got the boost. But for me and on Holliday, it's just the rookie bias. Like I'd rather take someone like Dansby or Tyro, or even the guys after Holliday, just because I know what kind of players they are. And that's just something I have with all rookies for the most part.
That's totally fair. You and Derek Cardi could probably get along pretty well if you had a conversation. The thing for me with Jackson Holliday that's kind of weird, I'm kind of on the other side. I thought he'd be going even higher, and I'm just kind of comping him with Anthony Volpe last season, who had a good spring. Not nearly as much hype around him as a prospect, and then there was drafts where Anthony Volpe was going well inside the top 100. I think Anthony Volpe had a minimum pick of like 62, 63. Now, that was actually after we had direct confirmation that he was going to be on the team. But Jackson Holliday's going 110 picks later. I think Volpe's ADP settled in about 100 last year, 90 or 100. You'd probably remember a little bit better, maybe a little bit later. But I'm surprised that Holliday's not jumping up even higher. Now, if they do say he's our opening day second baseman, then you can forget about 170. He'll be going 50 picks higher probably. But isn't it kind of surprise you that there's not even maybe a little bit more hype, just considering all the talk about Holliday, number one prospect, yada, yada?
No, that's a good point. So I think it's two things. Well, one thing that supports what you think is that Holliday's like, I mean, he's like the number one prospect. Volpe wasn't that last year. But the thing that I wasn't in on Volpe last year at his price. After what I said, probably not surprising. But The thing with Volpe was there was a chance of him hitting leadoff, I think. And there's no chance for that with Holliday. So he's going to be hitting eighth or ninth. So if he does go as high as Volpe did, then it's because of just the prospect pedigree. But people are saying, from what I've heard, that his power is not there yet. I mean, he's 20, so you can't really expect it to be there yet. That's something that Soto did, and that's super rare. I'm not saying they're different players completely, but it's just like that concept of being ready at that age. And so for me, one thing I look for a lot when I do my rankings and when I'm drafting is looking for roster position or a lineup positioning, and him and Holiday batting lower in a good lineup. I mean, it's better than other scenarios, but it's at this point in the draft, I'd rather get someone hitting like top four, top five. So I think that's also, that could be a reason why he's still down where he is in ADP Holiday, but I mean, people could be overlooking that for other reasons, but that's what I see.
No, that's totally fair. I mean, the majority of these guys, if you're looking as a whole, don't pan out in their first year, especially the power aspect. Like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was hyped as one of the best power prospects like maybe ever. I don't know. And then he comes up in his first year and it was, I forget, it was in the teens for home runs. So, and he was, you know, Holiday has nowhere near the type of power projection that you'd get out of Guerrero. So even if he does play the whole year, Holiday might end up with 10 home runs, 12 home runs. Now, I think he'll be pretty valuable if he does hypothetically play the whole season in the Orioles lineup. If he's batting ninth hypothetically and turning it over to, you know, however they end up doing it, Henderson, Mullins, Rutschman, whatever, there could be a lot of runs in it for him. But yeah, there is a lot of risk. I've been drafting all throughout the offseason, and I took him a few times in October and November because I was getting him at like 250, 260. And I figured it was kind of worth the risk at that point as like my backup shortstop. And if he does pan out, then I'm looking pretty good. But it will get to a point, especially like if we see that tweet from Underdog, Jackson Holiday named opening day second baseman. Where do you think that would put him? Do you think he would be a top 100 ADP guy in mains if we see that?
Does it? I mean, I don't know if his ADP would be in the top 100, but I'm sure his min would be pre-pick 100. So I just pulled up his fan graphs quickly because it has all the projections laid out, Holiday. And so one thing I always wonder when I hear people – so take Wyatt Langford, different position, but same concept. Big rookie getting moved up draft boards because of how he's performing. I don't know how well Holiday is doing, but they're both moving up. I always wonder, what do people expect from stats? Because, like, it's one thing to say they're going to be really good, but what is really good? Or I hope they're really good. They're a top prospect, so what are they going to do? Because, like, with Dansby in this going before Jackson, he's like a 25-10 guy with 80 and 80 runs in RBIs. Are we expecting Holiday to produce at that level in his rookie year? Like, so projections are always low. You mentioned Derek Cardi and how he's kind of down on rookies, but it's more of like a formulaic reason, I think. And I think he supports what the bad X produces for rookies. But the best projection I'm looking at right now on Fangraphs for Jackson Holiday is 11 homers, 12 steals, and that's with zips. So they're taking into account historical players of his age and, I guess, probably underlying skills. I mean, they have good runs in RBI. I mean, very good, like 86 runs, 70 RBI. But if he's hitting eighth or ninth, I don't know if he's going to reach those totals. So you're almost asking for Adley to get hurt or Gunnar to get hurt or for him to do so well that he pushes those guys out of the top two. And I understand that, like, if you're playing in a keeper league, it's different. If you're playing in a dynasty, it's different. If you're playing in a 10-team league, it's different. But if you're playing 12s, like an OC where you're rostering 360 people, and then you're going pretty deep into the player pool still. And then if you're doing a 15, it's even more. And at that point where you're talking like round 10, I need something better than 8 and 9, which is what most of the projections are saying. And compared, like how I mentioned Dansby's projection roughly and Tyro 20 and 30, I'd rather take those guys who have done it before. And I'm just more confident in what I'm going to get. Cause just going back on the rookie, what are they going to provide? I know they're good, but what are you expecting when you take them?
Yeah. There are people who push back on projections all the time, and they'll say, Corbin Carroll, what about Corbin Carroll and Julio Rodriguez and Bobby Witt Jr.? Like, those are the outliers. Those are not the, you know, the commonplace examples. If you do look at the projections, like you said, the loftiest one has Holiday 11 and 12, and Zips tends to go kind of a little bit overboard sometimes in terms of projections. And it, the way that Zips works, from what I understand, and I've talked with Dan Zimborski once about this. I messaged him just asking him a couple questions. It projects every single player over a full season. So even if you're just some random player in Double A, it'll project what you would do over the course of a full major league season. So that's why it would kind of look a little bit skewed in terms of like games played sometimes. You mentioned Wyatt Langford. Wyatt Langford, Zips projection has him as probably close to a first round player. 24-18 with a .264 batting average, 98 RBI and 81 runs. Maybe not a first round player, but he's like a top couple of round player. Which is just absurd. So, I mean, yeah, pushing rookies up. I don't know if he's going to do that. We never really know. Like I mentioned, like, you see the Carrolls and the Wits of the world, but you also have the, you know, the Kelenics of the world that do happen. So we never really know for sure, but it is definitely more of a risk to be taking a guy like Jackson Holliday, especially as the price will likely keep going up and up, because he's looked pretty impressive this spring. They've been hitting him usually at the top of the order. A lot of the time I've seen him first. He has been down a few times, but I think that price is going to keep rising. And as it does, I just get a little bit less interested. And, you know, every round he goes up. Let's talk about kind of this last grouping here, Ben. Jeremy Peña, Carlos Correa, Luis Renjifo, Vaughn Grissom, Zach Neto, JP Crawford, Jackson Merrill, Ezekiel Duran. These are kind of like the middle infielder type names, the last acceptable potential guys that you'd maybe have as a starting shortstop on your roster. What's your interest level from these guys, from the kind of the rest of the group here?
Yeah, so I was alluding to where the position drops off, and I do not want most of these guys. So Peña, people were high on him going to last year, but he hits lower in the lineup also on the Astros. It's a good lineup, but he had no homers in the second half, so something went wrong with his swing. Correa, I just don't want to touch him ever. He gets hurt, and now he had an awful year last year. He doesn't run. Goes back to the thinking behind Seager, but he's just like the worst possible version of Seager. Renjifo is good. He's good for the eligibility, and so he's someone I would take, but people tend to be high on him, Renjifo, because of the eligibility. So I don't think he'll produce as well, like, to justify where he goes sometimes. So I know how much Bubba loves him, and I know a lot, like, Ryan loves him too. Other people I've listened to do like Renjifo, but he's done this 2 years in a row where he has a hot end to the season. He did this in 2022 where he caught fire end of the year, and I think he got overdrafted last year, but then he ended up playing again in the second half late, and then it happened again this year. So if he starts out performing like he did at the end of last year, like in April and May, then okay, he proves me wrong. It's just that he's done this twice now. I don't know if people have noticed it before, like I have, but it's just something to be wary of. Grissom, I was going to be a lot more into drafting him until he got hurt. Yeah. I'm still willing to take him. I'm surprised, like, the max here is 359, so people have adjusted for that. Neto is interesting. I know a lot of people like him. I just don't see it. People say he's like a power speed guy, but I was looking, and he is 59th percentile sprint speed, and I don't see that being someone who's going to be a power speed guy. Like, maybe he's faster, he's young, but the A's or the Angels have mainly Washington has said that he wants guys to run, and I think they have some of the highest steal totals in spring training so far, so that's good. But Neto isn't the fastest guy, so I don't know how good that'll be. He's young. I think they called him up too early, so that could hinder how he performs. I took Jackson Merrill on a couple of DCs, so I like that he's going to play now. I don't know what to expect. It was more just like one of those rookie flyer picks, and I got fortunate with that so far. But in terms of like having him as my middle infielder, I'm not too sure like what to expect from Merrill. He's also very young. He's like 20, I think. So yeah, I mean, Tim Anderson is interesting. He hit a homer the other day, so I guess he's able to hit homers still. That's always been the issue with Anderson. The lack of the power last year. He's going to play a lot on the Marlins, but I don't know if he's going to hit top of the lineup. I know he's been hitting fifth a lot lately, which kind of hurts a little bit. You prefer him to bat one or two. I mean, he could always move up, but yes, it's if I'm – I'd almost rather wait at this point and take – I'll give away one of my favorite picks, Mason Wynn. I'd rather wait and get Mason Wynn if I have to choose from this group, unless I get, like, Anderson, like I kind of said. And, yeah, I definitely don't want to be taking my starting shortstop at this point.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I maybe would rather go with a second baseman for my middle infield if I could, but I mean, you can't always get lucky, or you can't always pick and choose in drafts. So if I had to take someone, probably be like I said, Renhifo or maybe Tim Anderson.
I think those are the two to really look at as well. Renhifo, I agree with you that if he didn't have all these positions of eligibility, people wouldn't be nearly as interested. It does make him pretty interesting, and especially like on the NFBC where the threshold's pretty high, to have second, third, shortstop, and outfield is pretty impressive. I don't know if you can even have more than four positions. Have you ever seen five positions of eligibility before? Is that something you've seen? I don't know if I've ever seen it.
No, I don't know about NFBC, but I remember Marwin Gonzalez used to have for all the infield and the outfield.
On Yahoo.
Like Yahoo. Yeah.
Some crazy stuff on Yahoo, yeah. But yeah, Renhifo is kind of interesting. That the whole Angels team is just kind of, I don't want to watch any Angels related stuff. They're just a very tough team to have any rooting interest in at all. Trout's I feel so bad for Mike Trout, just as kind of a side thing. There's nothing there for him. And it was so dejecting, like the same day where he says like, I want to stay here and win the right way. And all this, like Rendon literally did what he did the exact same day and said what he said. It's just brutal. Renhifo's fine. He's probably the guy that I would take in this range. But to your overall point, if your starting shortstop is coming out of this range, it's probably not going to be looking so great for you. Jackson Merrill's interesting because he is going to be on the opening day roster, it looks like. I don't know exactly, again, the whole rookie thing, what they're going to look like in their first year. If he ends up with shortstop and outfield eligibility, that would be something that is pretty interesting, especially as a later pick. But he'll be somebody that does kind of get pushed up a little bit now that we do know that he's going to be at least going to Korea. I guess they didn't say for sure he's going to be there once the actual season gets going. But yeah, Tim Anderson is the other one. He just feels like somebody who will eventually be put at the top of the order. Even if it doesn't come right away, he'll eventually make his way there. And it just feels like a bounce back waiting to happen. He's somebody that I've drafted a few times, even before he was signed, just because the price was so cheap. A late source of batting average and stolen bases is really nice, even if he only hits like 7 or 8 home runs. So I do think that Tim Anderson is probably the guy in this range. But I don't want to gloss over J.P. Crawford either, because I do think that there is some interest in Crawford. And maybe that's just because I had him on a couple teams last year and I saw what he did down the stretch the second half of the year. But I mean, he's somebody who doesn't really hurt you anywhere. Decent batting average, a couple stolen bases. He had 19 home runs last year. I think he's likely to be at top of the order. I'm not sure exactly how the Mariners orders are going to shake up, but do you got any interest in JP Crawford in this range?
Yeah. So I think he's fine. It's just that when I've been drafting so far, I found that I'm slightly chasing speed at this point in the draft, at least with my middle infielder. So, and he doesn't really give you any steals. So okay. I've tended to go with someone like Bryce Terang, who may not get all the playing time, but should be in a strong side of platoon and would hopefully get 20 steals. It's just more of a roster construction thing. Like if I'm set with steals and Crawford's there, I'll take that steady production with him batting leadoff all the time, maybe putting up 80 runs, decent average, and some homers and RBI, but if I need steals, I'm going to go somewhere else.
That's fair. Now, outside of the names that we've mentioned, is there anybody that in any tier of any group or, you know, outside of who the guys we specified, like, is there anybody that's worth talking about still, you think?
Yeah. So I'll mention three names quickly. Trevor Story, Willy Adames, and Ezekiel Tovar. Those are kind of like the last it's those are like the edge of the cliff for me, for where I want my starter by. And I think before we started recording, I was mentioning I've taken Story a couple times. I forget if he's my middle infielder or my starter. I'm sure he's my starter at least on one team. And like Willie, he disappointed me a lot last year, Willie Adames, but there's a chance he bounces back. He could get traded too. Maybe that helps him midseason. And Tovar, he's very – people are really into Tovar right now. It's kind of cooled for me. So the projections really like Tovar. They have him dollar-wise as a decently priced player. But the one thing, going back to lineup position, he's not really hitting leadoff for the Rockies right now in spring training, which is kind of annoying and confusing because he's like they're – besides him and besides Nolan Jones, he's kind of their future. And I don't get why they're batting Chris Bryant second when he's doesn't deserve that anymore. And even Charlie Blackmon, like they're playing like it's 2015, but yeah, so that kind of hurts Tovar for me. I mean, I would take him if I needed a shortstop, but those three, I think are kind of like the last names where I'd be comfortable starting them as my shortstop.
Yeah, Adames, I don't understand how it's gotten to this point where he's at 191 in terms of ADP. Story, I saw it, I think it was Chris Towers. Somebody yesterday was talking about Trevor Story, comparing him to Anthony Volpe and the price difference, how you can get Story, you know, 50, 60 picks later. Not to say that it's going to be the same, but it could be pretty damn similar in terms of the production there. Tovar, I think we all have a thing for Rocky shortstops over the last couple decades, the way that things have turned out with Tulowitzki and Story. Tovar looks like the guy who's kind of next in line, but is he going to be able to equal what those guys did? I'm not 100% sure, but I do agree with you. There is some potential there, but if he's batting fifth or sixth or seventh for the Rockies, like there's only so much you can do in that situation. Even if you're leading off for the Rockies, there's only so much you can do. But if they don't have you at least at the top of the order, I don't know that there's so much we can really say about Ezekiel Tovar. Now, you mentioned Tyro Estrada and Wynn are probably like your favorite guys. Is there somebody that like you will absolutely avoid at all costs? You wouldn't draft him no matter what this season at the position?
I'll give you two names. One will be surprising, one won't be. So I don't want to draft Ellie, nowhere near where he's going.
Yeah.
And the other one is actually Anthony Volpe. I think he's getting overdrafted. Okay. And I'm a Yankee fan. I was team Oswald Peraza last year, and that was upsetting when he didn't get a chance. And I don't know, Volpe, watching him, like his swing's horrible. I know he's worked on it in the offseason. That's why he hit 200 or 210 or 220, whatever he hit. And he played the whole year. He had 60 runs, 60 RBI. He's not going to hit the top of the lineup right now. It's going to be DJ. And then I guess if DJ gets hurt, they could put Torres up there. They could put Verdugo up there. I don't know. He hasn't dropped as much as I think he should have. Volpe, his ADP is only like, we were kind of trying to figure out what it was last year. Probably like 25 picks later than what he was last year, yeah. Assuming it was pick 100. And I would rather take, the comp to Story is great, low average, but Story's going to probably get more homers and RBI and more runs. So, yeah, I don't want any part of Volpe where he's going.
I hear a lot of people talking about how he's probably going to beat his projection for batting average and he's likely to be a 250, 260 guy. I don't see that. Maybe in a couple of years, but I think as of right now, he's probably a 230 to 240 hitter. And people talk about how like the floor is 2020. That came over playing the entire season. That doesn't give him like that was massive accumulation type stuff. That doesn't give him any wiggle room to miss 20 games because most players are not playing 160 games every year. In all likelihood, it's probably 140. And in that case, it's 17 and 16 or something. And then it's just, you know, a little bit less valuable than what you're maybe expecting out of Volpe. I kind of agree. I don't have much interest. I think he was about pick 100 last year by the time things settled down roughly. And I agree. Like, we should have gotten more of a discount based on what we saw last year. Bottom of the order, batting, you know, barely hitting his weight. I can't really get behind him at pick 125 here. And potentially, who knows, maybe people will start jumping him up a little bit again if there's any kind of positive news or whatever. This time of year, prices are just jumping all over the place. If he hits three home runs over the next 3 days, then he's going to the top 100. It's just kind of a crazy time of year. But Ben, I really appreciate you making the time to join me today, man. It's been great going over this with you.
Thanks for having me on, Joe. It's been a pleasure. Yeah, it's always fun to talk baseball, especially fantasy baseball. And yeah, so hopefully do it again.
Oh, well, absolutely do it again. Yeah. Like I mentioned before, Ben is one of our newest writers here. Everybody should be going and following him at BreakingBen_T over on Twitter. I guess you're a Breaking Bad fan.
Someone asked me, I think Rob DiPietro asked me that when he first had me on a couple years ago. It's actually for Breaking Benjamin, the band.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why the brain just went. I know I've seen you like talk about Game of Thrones and a couple other shows. So mm-hmm. I just figured you were like a TV show buff, but yeah, I always made the Breaking Bad connection. I'll have to change that in my head now.
Well, it's easy because it's a really popular show. I actually never watched Breaking Bad.
Okay.
It's one I haven't watched. Yeah. I'm starting to get more into shows, but like you mentioned, like Game of Thrones, I'm more into like the sci-fi, like Marvel, Star Wars, stuff like that. But
okay.
Trying to branch out a little bit. Yeah. Breaking Benjamin was my favorite band growing up, and I made my Twitter in like high school. So I'm like, well, it's my favorite band. Why not? And my name's Ben. So it kind of fit, you know.
That makes sense. Do you like the Game of Thrones spinoffs?
Yeah, I was a big fan of House of the Dragon. So yeah. I've read the books, and I'm looking forward to season two coming out.
I haven't seen it. I have not seen it. I haven't watched Game of Thrones in a few years. I'm probably going to do a rewatch, and then maybe I'll get into that at some point. Once, maybe after the baseball season ends and things die down again, because it's just busy time around here. Again, make sure you are following Ben over on Twitter. You'll see the name in the description of the episode as well. You can check me out on Twitter at JoeOrico99, and make sure you guys are looking at our draft guide. Ben put a lot of work into it. I put a lot of work. We all put a lot of work into it. So make sure you guys are giving it a read and checking out everything we have to offer down there. We have a couple more preview shows coming up over the next couple days. Tomorrow, it is Relievers with Greg Jewett. And then Friday, somebody that Ben is very familiar with. To talk catchers, it is none other than Casey Bubba himself. But until tomorrow with Greg, guys, I wish you a good night, and we will see you then.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.